podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is Tour Live. It's Neil Atkinson joined by Neil Jones and Paul Johnson and John Gibbons. Just over there, John, you can see him. As we're settled in and looking forward to a weekend of Premier League action. We're going to talk a little bit about that in general up the top of this show coming up as well. I'm talking to Sadgers about what's gone on in Turkey. If you listen to this as a podcast in Syria with the earthquake and some fundraising efforts he's doing from Born and Red. And John, you spoke to
Chris Roberts earlier today, who's written a book about greed and football. And as a fundraiser for Sean's Place in Liverpool. So yeah, I spoke to him earlier today as well.
That is coming up if you listen to this as a podcast. If you're enjoying it as part of our YouTube offering, you are more than welcome. It's good to have you on board. Before we get into literally what the manager said at his press conference today and also just in general looking ahead to Newcastle, I want to sort of start this off. I'll go to you first, Neil Jones. There was something in the, not just in the Arsenal results, but also the Newcastle result and performance away at Bournemouth last weekend, where all of a sudden, you know, this is off the back of Arsenal obviously having a poor result themselves against Brentford, getting beat at Goodison Park. There was something that just sort of made me wonder if a couple of the sides that have been able to sort of tear the strip, who you might not have thought would be quite where they would be, were suddenly finding it a little bit trickier this season. I thought Arsenal versus City was fascinating. The quality wasn't quite where I thought it might be, but ultimately City had gears that Arsenal just didn't quite have over the course of the 90 minutes.
Yeah, I'd go along with that. Yeah, I suppose what you see, I watched the Newcastle game actually last Saturday as well at Bournemouth, and I think what you see is how well they've done, both those teams, you know, to get where they've got to, but also that they're not used to sustaining that level of performance. And that's been one of the things that Liverpool and Manchester City have made teams do pretty much, isn't it? They've made teams look and say, well, we have to get 90 points plus, don't we, if we want to win the league. We have to get probably, you know, 75, 80 points to get in the Champions League. And yeah, I think you saw the limitations of Newcastle's squad. I think maybe as well the fact that they've got a final on the horizon, which is obviously a massive deal for them, potential to win a trophy. You were seeing maybe them be a bit cautious with the team selection with leaving Wilson out, maybe being a bit cautious with some of the subs and taking Almiron off. And maybe you saw a little bit of that with Arsenal as well, that maybe they were thinking a few things, you know, worrying for the longer term instead of the here and now with Ben White, for example, not playing the game and certain other things. I know our Arsenal correspondent, the Gold Charles, has been calling for Arteta to make a few changes with Martinelli and Trossard and players like that. But maybe they're not used to that rhythm of sort of being able to do that and feeling safe. They feel like they have to go and try and win every game. So, yeah, I wouldn't sort of write Arsenal off on the back of that. But I did think they sort of, the last half hour of that game in particular, sort of saw a little bit of a, it was almost like he looked over the edge of the cliff and thought, oh, right, okay, yeah, you know, are we actually ready to sort of really go at these? And maybe Newcastle are feeling something a little bit similar with the top four.
I think it's been, you know, these sides, listen, let's be clear about this. Newcastle, for instance, have had a couple of injury issues through the season. They spend a lot of money on Isak. It doesn't quite come for them. They've had Sam Maximan missing as well. But all of a sudden last weekend, they end up with three going off with injuries during the game, Paul. Willock is one of them, and he looks like he'll miss this one. The other two, as Neil says, may well be precautions, but they were missing sort of five lads before a ball was kicked. And this is where, you know, we've had a lot of that during this campaign, you know, and it's very, very well documented. And I've got a bit of sympathy when it happens. I've got a bit of sympathy when it happens to any side that all of a sudden you're slightly denuded of options. Arsenal, it was interesting to me that Partey has been important to them. It's the biggest game of the season, and all of a sudden he needs to miss it from nowhere. You know, that's what hasn't been happening to Arsenal week in, week out. And there is a lot of toll on these footballers. We talk about it all the time. And I do just sort of wonder if one or two others around the division who have been able to field really quite consistent 11s are suddenly going to find it a bit harder as we hit the running.
Yeah, I think what Neil, you know, alluded to it just a minute ago, we were saying about how difficult it is to keep these performances and put a run of games together. And, you know, what both City and Liverpool have done over the last few years is phenomenal when you look at it like that. And it's only when, you know, the teams you're now involved in it, your Newcastle, they get a couple of key injuries. You know, obviously, Guimaraes is suspended as well. I think the impact on teams like Newcastle, who aren't used to playing at this level week in, week out, and, you know, and fair play to them, they've been on a great run. Arsenal too, like Neil said, you know, have been fantastic. But the minute some key little things happen, which, again, in fairness to City, they've had a few injuries over the past few years when we've been in running, as have we. Both City and Liverpool have managed to deal with that, I think, really well, considering, you know, what impact it can have on your team and on your, obviously, your run of games. So it is very interesting to see that, you know, they both are stuttering a little bit now. You know, I think Newcastle, they've drawn the last few games. Arsenal, again, have on a little bit of a bad run. And it's how you get out of that. You know, and I saw some Arsenal fans, you know, on Twitter just writing them off already. And you're like, well, come on, lads, you know, give yourself a break. You know, it is hard to keep up that run. But I just think with Newcastle as well, just those changes. And like Neil said, well, having the cup game coming up as well a week on Sunday, you're going to be thinking about that. You know, it's a long time since they've been in the final. So it is interesting to see how they manage all these things at the moment.
Yeah, I'll just echo what both of you said, really, in that, you know, you can look for reasons why, you know, teams are struggling and stuff like that. And Newcastle, to be fair, have had injuries all season and have coped really well with it. But it gets to the point where, you know, you're asking lads to go a lot and their performance has sort of dropped from there. And Arsenal have barely rotated, and at some point, you know, it's gonna have that sort of impact, really. But, you know, what I would say is, for both those teams, like you've said, it's the main thing is it's just so hard to start in August, go to May, and, you know, think you can, you know, go as relentlessly as what Liverpool and City have. You know, having a bad month should be fine and used to be fine, and that's all it might be. You know, for both teams, really, it's just sort of a bad month. But we've got to the position where, you know, apparently suddenly it is impossible. And, you know, whether they, we'll see. If it's tiredness, it might not come back. If it's just a bad month, you know, they will, and we'll have to sort of see on that, really, for you know, the future, for you know, let's hope you know, either whether it's a bad month or a drop off, it just continues on Liverpool for Saturday night or for Liverpool.
We've got a hope around that, Neil. I'm intrigued by, in amongst all of this, where we do or don't think top four is, because all of a sudden here, you know, you're looking at a Newcastle side that haven't won over 50% of the games. It's worth pointing that out. You know, United at the minute look impressive, but the games are going to start coming thick and fast. And there is something to be said about knowing course and distance. And Liverpool do know that. They do have that in their pockets. And we've got to bear that in mind with this side. We know how poor they've been. The manager knows how poor they've been. There's no getting away from how poor they've been game to game. But there is now, you know, there's a lot longer to go than we all think. And we all sort of feel like there is. For Liverpool, there's 17 games to go. They've got to find their way through. Being able to work out how to do this. We've done it in the past, and it does just sort of look to me like Arsenal, listen, they haven't even qualified for the Champions League last few seasons. They themselves have got to sort of work this out now, and Liverpool do know it. And where Newcastle are concerned, Newcastle haven't had the reality out of it either, and Liverpool, again, do know it.
Yeah, I mean, I saw the comment there in amongst the YouTube stuff about, you know, Arsenal have got Europa League coming back to come in the next few weeks, and, you know, that gives them an extra challenge, never mind just in terms of the amount of games, but just in terms of the psychological element of playing on a Sunday when Man City maybe play an early kickoff or a Saturday afternoon, and they've all of a sudden, the gap's a false gap because there's games in hand, but it's 6 points or 8 points, and they're suddenly thinking, oh, wow, okay, we need to really win this game, you know, and it's maybe a bit of a tired legs from the midweek anyway, and, you know, it's not maybe the best atmosphere or that kind of thing. So there's challenges coming for Arsenal. You're right. I mean, I think what shouldn't be forgotten among Newcastle in particular, a little bit with Arsenal, but I think Arsenal are a good side, a very good side, is a lot of these players are players who you wouldn't say are Champions League players. You know, some of them are, you know, Kieran Trippier is a good player, and Bruno Guimaraes is a good player, and you know, that's pretty much it, isn't it? Botman, maybe you'd say, yeah, he was signed with that proviso. The rest are sort of either at their level or above it, you know, in terms of players like Dan Byrne and Fabian Schär and, you know, Sean Longstaff and players like that. They're not players who are sort of, they know they belong at this level. They're players who are almost surprising themselves a little bit and getting to this position where it's like, wow, you know, we've got a real chance there of playing at that, you know, in this thing. And we saw with Liverpool, you know,
it took Liverpool two seasons of qualifying for the Champions League on the last day of the season, and they were a better side than Newcastle. I think at that point they had better players than Newcastle generally, you know, but they still looked a little bit and needed a little bit of luck, and you know, there was a few moments where they were thinking, oh, have we blown it, and that kind of thing. Emre Can overhead kicks and Simon Mignolet making some big saves in some games. I mean, they had to sign Virgil van Dijk mid-season, otherwise they probably wouldn't have made it in that, you know, the very first or the season they got to the Champions League final. So there are lots of challenges to come, and you're right. You're right to say, I mean, 17 league games Liverpool have got left to play. I think the sort of elephant in the room, I suppose, is they really have to win this one or certainly avoid defeat on Saturday. Not, you know, if they can do that and put a bit of pressure on them, you can start suddenly sort of pulling my old clips from a couple of weeks ago and saying what we're on about.
No, the idea of avoiding defeat, I think, is massive in this one, Paul. The other thing I'll point out is that the current top nine, Liverpool sit ninth, so the eight teams that are above them, the only one they've got to go to away from home left is Manchester City. At the end of this weekend, they'll have played everyone else away from home who currently sits above them in the league table. Not getting beat, I think, is valuable in this one. It's not as simple as there'll be a desire, I think, to make it feel like it's a decider. And I do feel as though if Liverpool lose, it'll feel relatively decisive. It will become tough and it will feel as though they're under a lot of pressure all of a sudden. But that said, I think that not losing the game is important, because there's a thing about sides that come third and fourth. They drop points all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're only getting 70 points or 72 points to come fourth, that's, you know, you've effectively there, you've missed out on 42 points over the course of a campaign. You know, and that's the thing we need to remember, I think, is that you drop points all the time. But what that, the flip side of that, from a Liverpool point of view or a Chelsea point of view or even a Brighton point of view, go on a run. If you go on a run where you win 5 out of 5, all of a sudden it looks really different because everyone else drops points all the time. The important thing is not losing.
Yeah, I definitely think, you know, some of the comments are coming up as well about, you know, winning away, because our away form this season has been particularly poor, you know, compared to what it has been in other years. I think, though, what you've said, if all of a sudden, if you know, you look at them and you see the table and you see the red, like, you know, marks against it where you've had a loss, if you can just start, you know, getting rid of those, you know, so that's why I think, obviously, you know, best case scenario, we go and we beat them tomorrow. It's not going to be easy. But also, I think, as you say, on the flip of it, don't lose. Let's get out of the habit of losing games, because it's obviously, that's a good habit to get out of, because we've been in that habit far too much this season. And, you know, like, obviously, like, you know, Neil said about the press conference, and it was Klopp felt like, you know, it was good to come into a press conference on the back of a win. And, you know, what, as fans, what we're all hoping is that win can kickstart our season. We've been saying that for about maybe 3 or 4 weeks. Every time we had a good result, we'd say, oh, is this the one that's going to kickstart the season? But I think with the, obviously, return of some key players from injury, you know, obviously performances coming on, you know, off the bench, Virgil being back and probably in contention for tomorrow, it does feel like Monday was a bit of a turning point. And I know, like, you know, but like you just said, 17 games left, you're just under half the season left, which is mad when you think about, you know, where we're at. So all those things combined, I think it is just that, you know, going into tomorrow, it would be great if we can go there and get a win. But flip side as well, don't forget, the only team we've lost to this season, Newcastle, is us. And we know how obviously that panned out, you know, in the 8th minute of injury time. So will Newcastle be wanting to, you know, prove a point? Will they be wanting to, you know, get one, you know, stick one on us, you know, for their only loss? And also, it's not going to be, I can't see it being a 4-3, you know, because Newcastle, I think, have only conceded 13 goals all season. So they've built their season on really being tight. So, you know, looking at it, I can't wait for the game. But there's so many variables that, you know, you can almost say, you know, throw a dice and say that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, and the variables include, you know, team selection. I've saw one of the comments come through there. Well, Newcastle West players for the cup final next week. You know, for us, we've got, you know, a big game on Tuesday. And, you know, you can look at that two ways, really. You think, well, do you try and get Jota, Virgil, maybe even Bobby some minutes in the legs, just so they're options at least, you know, for Tuesday? You know, throwing any of them in to start, you know, on Tuesday, reasonably cold. Yeah, Virgil's not been out as long as the other two, but, you know, it is a sort of a big shout, really. But even if you're looking at someone like Jota and Firmino off the bench, you know, surely the more minutes they can play sort of before that, the better. So it works sort of both ways. And then you go in the other way and looking at who you can sort of rest. And so, you know, the question marks come massively from, we don't know what teams are going to be putting out. There's you know, a little bit of a mindset thing, you know, with you look, it's a big team for both games for reasons we've described, and both teams are wanting to win it, but there is other things, you know, in the back of the mind there as well, where, you know, you don't want to get injured and things like that. And so it is, and then, you know, someone again pointed out on the comments about Liverpool's away form that the Neil sort of flashed up, and that is a factor, really. You know, is it two away wins in the Premier League this season? It's poor, isn't it? And, you know, you're talking about going to a good team with the defensive record that Paul's just said there, and, you know, you'd be arrogant to just say we're going to roll them based on one win against a team of crap. And so I think, you know, it's they need to be on it. They'll take some beating on Saturday night. That's not to say we can't do it, but they'll take some beating.
More on Newcastle themselves in a minute or two, Neil. I'm struck by, you know, firstly, obviously where Chelsea are as well, the Spurs and Conte, and the Conte thing just all seems a bit miserable, to be quite honest with you. I actually found it quite sad reading his remarks today about the fact that he's trying to force himself back and go from there and all of that. What are, you know, ultimately here, it isn't just the idea of obviously getting to Newcastle. They are the final sort of one here. Liverpool have got these other sides as well. They've got to find their way through and round. And it's going to be a tough, you know, it is this idea of they're also going for this as well. They're running along this one as well. And I think it is going to be, you know, from a top four point of view, I expect Spurs and Chelsea to end up rearing their heads in it in the same way I expect Liverpool to. I don't think it's just the idea of seeing off Newcastle and then everything's fine. I think that these are other good sides who are going to be able to find their way through.
Yeah, I think Chelsea definitely. I think Spurs might be in trouble with the midfield injuries that they've got. And, you know, you look at the sort of, if you were looking at Liverpool's midfield as a weak link, you're looking at Spurs as now and saying, well, you know, Pape Sarr and Oliver Skip sort of having to play a fair few games. They've got obviously problems with Højbjerg, with Bissouma, with Bentancur out for the season. Obviously, Lloris is out, so they're playing Fraser Forster. So they look like they're going to have to rely on their front players really to sort of absolutely, you know, deliver a lot of wins maybe they don't deserve or just get them over the line in games. I don't know how sustainable that is in a Conte side. You know, they don't seem to play that way where you think, well, if they can just go and smash teams in the first half and get 3-0 up and then sort of hang on. They're a little bit more structured, aren't they, Spurs? But I think you look at the quality Chelsea are putting on the field every week, and what they're doing at the moment can't carry on. I think it's 2 wins in 14, is it, that they've got? You know, that's crazy, isn't it? You know, for a team with that much, even before this spending spree, that was poor form for Chelsea, wasn't it? So I would look at them and think some point it clicks. You know, some point they stumble upon the right formula with, you know, the 4-2-3-1. João Félix looks like a very good player, doesn't he? He looks like he's going to be a really important player for them. What they get around them with Mudryk and Ziyech and Havertz, whoever else, I think they'll find the formula. So I think you're looking at Liverpool sort of almost get some ground made up before they do, you know, sort of put yourself in a position where they're having to do it under pressure as well, because you've got yourselves in gear. So don't wait for them to do it. But yeah, you're looking at that top four. I do think Newcastle are the ones. I don't like giving him credit because he likes to take his own credit. But Ian Doyle from the Echo has been saying that, you know, even when Newcastle was sort of in better form than they are now, I think, you know, he was saying they're the ones that'll drop out. And he said that about Leicester a couple of seasons ago. You know, it's always going to be Leicester. They're the ones who are going to drop out. I think you have to look at Newcastle the same way. I think United will be a bit too far away. But Newcastle are the ones in catch, and I would say it's Liverpool and Chelsea are the ones who are going to catch them. I wouldn't write Spurs off, but I think it'll be more difficult for them.
Okay, coming up, we have got, if you listen to this as a podcast, me talking to Sajid Iqbal about a fundraiser around Syria and Turkey, the awful scenes there, and John talking to Chris Roberts about his book. It is the Anfield Wrap. It is Tour Live. We are looking ahead to the big one at the weekend. We'll be back very, very soon to do that. It's Neil Atkinson, joined by Sajid Iqbal, who is from the Boredom Red podcast. And normally, we've had Sajid on a couple of shows. I'm sure you've heard him at some point doing some Anfield Wrap bits and pieces. And I've been lucky enough to be a guest on Boredom Red, enjoyed it immensely. He's had lots of good guests recently. And it'd be nice if we were just talking about the Reds, but we're not just talking about the Reds. We're talking about what is an enormous loss of life in the Middle East, in Turkey and Syria. And Saj has been doing some work to raise some funds for that. He's done come to us and Redmen, asked us to share the work that he's done. Obviously, more than happy to do that. So, Saj, can you just give people an update on what you've been doing and how you've been looking to raise some money?
Yeah, so just to give you a bit of an update, I'm part of a foundation called Abu Zahra Foundation based in Keighley. And recently we launched an appeal. We went live last week. And, you know, to be fair, we've done pretty well. We've raised around this minute in time on our Just Giving, we've run around £240,000. So we've raised a decent amount of money. What we're planning on doing with that money is we've recently, over the last couple of days, we're going to looking at launching like a little village where we will have our own tents, where these tents are costing, each tent is costing us around £450, which will house five people. With that tent, they will get blankets in there, bedding in there, stoves in there, coal, which will be enough to for people to use for the next 2 months for the, hopefully get them through the winter period. We've also got, this minute in time, yesterday I sent out 258 boxes of food essentials to the affected areas, which will be ramped up over the next week. In them food boxes, we've got all the essentials, like beans, three different types of rice, oil, just the general essentials, sugar, all that sort of things, which every single family will need. The people out here need, from what I've seen, is, you know, there's a lot of need. The areas that have been hit, they've been hit hard. And it's really, really hard to see. And for me personally, it's hit home because there's friends who I've known, they've lost their families to this. So it's hit me. Hence the reason why I've taken the lead in trying to raise as much money as possible. In terms of the Brownie Project, Neil, I've, you know, together with yourselves and Redmen, you know, it's a project that sort of worked with us with Islamic Relief in the past, where in Ramadan, we give something back to people who donate. It's a nice little brownie box. It comes in 12 different flavors. It's like a luxury box that we're giving out, and you know the cost of that for us guys is £4, so £6 will go towards the actual to the actual fundraiser that we're doing. We've had a good, decent sort of start in one day. I think we've already sold around 300 or 400 since launching yesterday, and it's just an appeal to all the fellow Reds out there that look, it's a £10 box. We've got collection points in every single major city in the UK. So yeah, look, all I can say is all the Reds that are there, just please, if you can, it's £10 in the box. We want to go out with this with a bang. It's a, like I said, it's a nice little box that you'll get, £10, and like I said, the collection points will be all over the UK.
Yeah, it's worth pointing out there's that Islamic Relief are working with the DEC around this, yep, sort of stuff, around with the Disasters Emergency Committee. And you know, you've been working with them on this and on matters before, Saj. So what's the best way for people to get in touch? What's the link? What's the, you know, if people wanted to reach out in general, what links would you give them in order to be able to contribute?
Okay, we've got Just Giving pages already ready to set up. I can send you the links on that, Neil, and you can fire that out. They can make payments on there. We do have a bank account. If people just want to say, I can give a sort code account number, and people can make payments on there as well. In terms of the brownies, we have a link where you can actually go on there, place your brownies, and select the collection points. The delivery date on that and them is the 26th of this month, where all you can go and collect your brownie points. So we've got, like I said, Just Giving pages and account numbers if required.
Excellent stuff indeed. From, you know, on all of this, Saj, ultimately the, you know, people will have seen the scenes of the appeal and seen just the scale and the scope of the loss of life. You know, for me, one of the things that just sort of hit at home is the idea that this is across two countries. I mean, that's how grand's the wrong word in a sense, but how enormous the scale of this has been. You know, it is absolutely devastated, hasn't it, so many communities across Turkey and Syria.
Oh, it's just a man. And to be fair, Neil, look, we already know Syria is already struggling as it is. And for them to have another, it's like another setback in trying to rebuild the sort of country from sort of scratch. So for them guys, it's even harder. From the Turkey perspective, Neil, if you actually see everybody seeing the scenes on TV and stuff, it's devastating. You look around, there's people without families. Another project that I am thinking about getting involved with is an orphan project, where there's so many little kids out there who don't have, you know, lost their mothers and fathers. So we're thinking about actually setting up a small little orphanage, 40 kids, and hopefully we'll be able to ramp that up in the coming months.
Okay, excellent stuff indeed. You can check this out. Obviously, the Anfield Wrap will be looking to push this stuff out as well. But if you check Born and Red's Twitter, that's Born and Red, Born, the word Born, the letter N, the word Red, LFC. That's where they are on social, and that's the way what they use for social across the board. There's a YouTube channel as well that you'll find all of that out of the collection point, the collection date for that is the 26th of February around the Brownies, if you are interested in contributing to that. But also if you go on there as well, there's loads and loads of bits and pieces of people just being able to contribute, just being able to give. Do check it out, do support if you can. Sajjad's been working very, very hard on it indeed, as have a number of other people as well. Do check it all out.
And it is John Gibbons for Tour Live, and I'm joined in the studio by Chris Roberts, who's a Liverpool fan and who's written a fantastic looking book, Football Above Everything. I'm saying it as I'll see how you say it, how football has brought out the worst in so many for the sport they love. So first of all, Chris, thanks for coming in, mate, and thanks for bringing us a copy of the book. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, John. Yeah, it's just obviously a great opportunity to talk about the important message behind the book, really. So obviously I wrote a book, which is something I didn't ever dream of doing, really. But last 2 years, I've lost my dad this week, actually, was the anniversary when I actually published the book, which was by pure fluke, really. Didn't mean it to come out that day, but it did. I thought it would take a lot longer. And writing the book was just a way of me trying to, like, overcome my issues with my own mental health and things like that, so... In the first year, you hear the famous saying, don't you know, after a year it subsides, the pain goes away a little bit, that grief like starts to like go away. And I was just feeling like this is not changing at all, really. Mm. And unfortunately, those around me could see obviously the pain I was in, my partner, more so than everybody else, really. So I realised, obviously, that I don't think there's something right here, do you know what I mean? I don't think this is just grief. I was feeling constantly down, having really dark thoughts, really, on a daily basis. And it was at that point I realised that, obviously, I might need to go and get some support of some sort, because I think what I've got here is depression. I didn't go to the doctor straight away because I was quite concerned about that. And by the way, this isn't the right thing to do. Maybe the going to the doctors might have been the right thing to do at first, but I didn't want to just straight away get put on antidepressants and then not actually explore other ways of actually trying to deal with this. So fortunately, I saw online that Sean's Place was a place in Bootle, and they do brilliant work with men of all different ages, helping them with the mental health. I think we can go through a little bit later on, can't we, what Sean's Place do. But it took me a while anyway, because my partner was like, I think you might need to go get some help. I could tell her about how I was feeling, but I was hiding this from all my friends and things like that. And my job is a school teacher, and I love school, being a school teacher, but I go in and put a performance on of a daily basis. The kids see the bright side of me. I'm smiling, I'm happy, I'm cracking jokes with them. I try and have like a really fun, safe classroom, really. That's what I love to do for the kids. But I go home and it was just completely drained out of me. Then at that point, I'd used all the... I say the good side of me. I wasn't coming home and being horrible to everybody, but I was drained mentally and physically. So eventually I filled out a referral form for Sean's Place, and it was hard, to be fair, writing it all down and seeing it, wrote down how I was feeling, and I needed to do it. Like, I'd to go into details about it all, like, as well, like, because it does touch on a bit in the introduction of the book. That was probably the hardest bit to write, because it was actually just me talking about my personal feelings and why I've done this. At times, like, I felt like it wasn't worthwhile me being on the earth, really. And that's like a terrible feeling to have, do you know what I mean? And maybe about 5 years ago, I had an incident where a friend, my best friend, actually was killed in town. Stabbed Sam Cooke, unfortunately.
I remember the story, yeah.
And that same day, I was meant to be going to Spurs away. I think it was when Lovren got absolutely torn apart by Harry Kane at Wembley. I actually got the phone call from one of my brother's friends to tell him. So I actually had to break the news to my little brother, which was heartbreaking. That was his best friend, you know what I mean? And then that same day, my partner was like 12 weeks pregnant at the time, lost a baby. Exactly the same day. So it was tough. I never went to Spurs Way, obviously, because I was going to look after my brother, but it was like, and I've said this before, I said this to my brother and a couple of his friends, it was like Sam was his guardian, my guardian angel, do you know what I mean? Like, not at that point, obviously, but there was a reason why I didn't go that day, unfortunately. I wasn't for Sam dying. I didn't want him to die, obviously, but it's there. And then, obviously, fortunately, I've went on since then to have a baby, and I've had another baby now as well. And every day, every week before an important scan, I go and pray to Sam. So I'm not really a true believer in that there is God. I don't know. I don't have the answer for that, but there's definitely a higher being who does look down on you. And I think Sam's looked down on my two little boys. He's helped us with that. But even then, that was a tough period. And again, I put it down as grief, but that was the first time I actually contemplated taking my life. And it got to about a year after we lost another baby, and it was at that point my partner was actually away visiting family. And it was at that point that I thought, I can't live on this earth anymore, do you know what I mean? And she was away. And fortunately, my dad was like my guardian angel, really. I'd been out that day with my friends, drinking as well, which drinking never helps in these situations. That's what I want to try and make clear to everyone. And by the way, I'm no angel. I do have a drink, but I feel a lot worse after I do it, but you feel like it's the right thing to do at the time. And the last part of the day, I went and met my dad. Liverpool had played at home, and he sensed something was wrong with me, do you know what I mean? And in the end, I just broke down crying to him. And he brought me back to my mum's, and they were like, oh, what's going on, lad, and all that. And they just really looked after me. He wouldn't let me go home. And to be fair, it was fortunate, because in my head at the start of the day, I planned that I'm going to go out, see everybody I love today, and then go home and kill myself. I hadn't got as far as planning how to do it, but it was going to happen, unfortunately. And it's only recently that I've actually told people that. So after the Community Shield this year, I realised my depression was back really bad again. And I've been drinking a little bit as well, but I wrote a letter for basically my partner and some of my close family, and also told my friends, really, because like my closest friends didn't know, like they knew I was upset about my dad dying, do you know what I mean? But I told them about that instance and just basically how I'm feeling all the time, really, and that's what the depression does, really. It just drains it out of you at all together, really. And you don't feel like you want to be on this earth anymore, and that's a terrible feeling to have, especially when I've got I had one little baby at home who absolutely loves me, do you know what I mean? I absolutely love the bones of him, and I just want to be as good a dad for them as my dad was for me. But that gap in my life, it felt like I couldn't fill it, to be fair, because my dad was such a big part of my life. It goes over that in the introduction, like that's why the book's called, it's called Football is Greater Than Anything, but I did it because I'm a maths primary school teacher. I've done the equality sign of greater than, and for anyone who doesn't know, obviously the sign at year two, the way we would teach a year two child is the crocodile eats the bigger amount. So obviously the crocodile on the front of the cover is eating the football, because football is greater than anything. And I think quite a few people who listen to this will think football is greater than anything. And I got that love for football from my dad. Basically, he was a physio for Prescott Cables, Marine, Southport. He ended up at Telford at one point, so we used to go down there, and I used to just be his little shadow, basically, and just follow him round. And then in between that, we'd have the match, and we got our season tickets and stuff. But it was like at that point that we, just writing this book, basically, came up during counselling anyway. So I've went to counselling, and I've just wrote down a stat here because I think it's quite important. Like, of the people who have depression in the UK, only 9% of males seek treatment. I'm not saying that you will definitely get better. Sometimes I come away from counselling feeling like you're drained, you know, because this is a bit like a counselling session now. I used to do Friday sessions, so this is me Friday session today. But sometimes you feel drained, like talking about it, but you need to go and seek some help, whether that be through the doctors. And I was literally, I got the train into town today, and there's signs all around now, and people are making people more aware of it, but that doesn't mean people are going to go and seek help. So hopefully that's what this book will do, raise awareness for that. And although the book is called Football is Greater Than Anything, we'll go into it a little bit. It's more looking at the dark side of football, and how, although we love football so much, like it does affect people's mental health. And that's obviously really quite key, because we all dream of becoming a footballer, but in this book you look at some of the instances, and it's like these footballers, when they get to this point, it's not what it's all meant to be, really, what we all expect it to be anyway.
Was the book for you a form of therapy? You know, you just said that this feels like a counselling session. Was it for you? You wanted to throw yourself into something. You mentioned football being a passion that you and your dad both had. He worked around football as well, so he'll have seen, you know, some times where, you know, the darker side of sort of football, if you like. So was it exploring a passion, but also something that you obviously had an interest in as well?
Yeah. So the book was like therapy for me. It was a little bit of a write about this in the introduction as well, but it's like a friend of mine was writing a book from work, and he put an example in of his chapter of his book, and he had like missing references. So the next minute I started reading and starting researching for this, and 2 hours had passed where I've trying to find these references for him, and I was like, wow, that 2 hours there, I've not thought about anything except for this. And I said to him, like, how are you going about it? And he was like, oh, you go to a publisher, you give them an idea and you do it. And I didn't want to do the publisher route. I've went self-published on Amazon, and hopefully the book gets big enough so that it will get put into other shops, because I wanted to not do this for myself. I wanted this to raise funds and money for Sean's Place. If I did it with a publisher, Sean's Place wouldn't get any money, do you know what I mean? Yeah. And that's the unfortunate thing. So that's the route I went with that anyway. But it was like therapy for me, and like, it was a shared passion with my dad, but it was being around that non-league football that I saw the two main concepts of the book: to win at all costs and greed. And obviously there's little different ways that can be. Like, it could be to win at all costs, could be like taking someone out last minute to win a pen. But I don't think I could write a whole book about someone taking someone out. So I looked at more things like what happens to people and what people do to try and stay at the top, really, and what they have to put themselves through. So, for example, the first chapter is about murder. So fortunately, football doesn't kill everybody. But obviously the famous person who was killed in football was Andres Escobar.
Yeah, 94.
94, yeah. So obviously, I don't know whether you've ever seen the documentary, The Two Escobars, ESPN, brilliant documentary, 30, by the 30, way. 30, 30, 30 for 30, yeah. So I watched that years ago and I always loved it, but I've delved a bit further into it, really. So looking at really this concept of narco soccer, which is unbelievable, really. It's like, basically, I wrote this in the book, this is a statement in the book. It's basically like Curtis Warren funding Liverpool winning the Champions League, because that's what happens. Pablo Escobar funds Atletico Nacional and they end up winning the Copa Libertadores. They end up playing against AC Milan, and obviously Andres Escobar is like one of the star players of that. But he loved football. Escobar did love football, Andres Escobar, so did Pablo Escobar, but he was also doing it from a greedy perspective as well. He was laundering all his money through the club, basically. Mm. So, like, say, for example, he sold a player for 1 million, they put it down as 3 million, and he put his own money in and things like that, just to obviously clear their own money and things like that. So that's how it starts off with, and then it goes into, like, performance-enhancing drugs, like, using them to stay at the top level. I have some examples from other sports, but also within football itself. And there's a bit of a surprise and one in there, but I'll let you read the book for it, because I don't want it to come out, because obviously this is on a Liverpool podcast, like, oh, he's anti-City and all that. But if someone involved in City anyway has been found to take performance enhancing drugs in the past, you might know it anyway. But when I've asked people in the past, I was like, do you know who this is? And they were like, no, I didn't know that. So that was interesting for me, researching that. And it's still something that happens now, to be fair, because like 15 Premier League footballers over the last 7 years have been tested positive for performance enhancing drugs. And only one of them was banned, and that was a 15-year-old from a Premier League club. They never named him. Mm. But the others were for either accidental ingestion or like therapeutic use. So they got away with it, basically. It then goes into like recreational drugs, not to stay at the top, but the pressures these players are dealing with, they end up taking recreational drugs and things like that. And I know that one of my good friends, he was banned from football for 2 years for taking cocaine. And shout out to him, Paddy Lacey, by the way, boxing in the Echo Arena, March the 11th. But he wasn't doing that to get better at football, was he? He was doing that to deal with his own mental health, his own anxiety and things like that. And he's ended up having the thing he loved, football, taken away from him then. And it's just like, that's what I look in that chapter. It was just like, daft, do you know what I mean? That's not a performance-enhancing drug. He got caught in a match day ban. If it was in a training situation, he would have got a rehab programme. So that's just like, do you know when you think about it, like someone's not openly going to take that to try and get better at football. I've never taken cocaine, but I'm presuming it doesn't help you to play football.
Certainly not in the long term.
No, definitely not. Yeah. I wouldn't have thought. And but obviously you've got your famous ones and that Maradona and that. So we touch on that in there. And then we're looking at like injuries and things like that. And Chris Kirkland's done brilliant work about this, like taking pain medication, and these players feel pressured to do that, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
To stay at the top level. And I think an important one in that is like Daniel Sturridge. Like, I think he gets a, like, he was brilliant, wasn't he, Sturridge, when he first burst onto the scene, but he got a bit of a bad rep. Like, people would say, oh, he's just, there's nothing wrong with him, etc. And
well, managers did it.
I think Klopp said it, didn't he, as well?
Hodgson.
And it's not fair, like, because he said, got some like interviews from him online and stuff like that, and he's talking about like he spent like hundreds of thousands of his own money like trying to get fit and stuff like that. Like, a player doesn't want to be injured, do they? And it affects their mental health. So that's what like the whole book, like we go into all different sides of things, then in the greed side of things, like the match fixing side of it, still to win at all costs, and then you've got your greed of like the governance of football, basically, and the ownership of football, which is obviously huge, huge things. And then the chapter for me that I felt was like probably like the most interesting one to write was about gambling, because there is a huge problem with gambling in the UK. And to be fair, 409 suicides are associated with problem gambling in 2018, which is like a scary statistic, isn't it, really, when you think about it? And what are the Premier League doing to help that, and clubs? So for like example one, Newcastle and Wolves played a game with each other. There was 716 exposures of a betting company in that game. It's like 6 logos per minute. It's just like,
well, half the clubs in the Premier League have got betting
and it's still going now. The government are saying they're going to look into it and things, but obviously it's getting cancelled for other things, and because of COVID and things like that, they put that ahead of like these football reforms, really. And obviously they're trying to look at that now with the task force and things like that, and Andy Burnham's done brilliant work on that, so we'll discuss that in the governance chapter. But like 33 out of 50 county FAs don't have a 3G football pitch, and football for me is like, and I think you were saying on the way down to this interview, like you were playing five-a-side last night, and like if you don't have access to these facilities, then how are people meant to improve the mental health, staying physically healthy? And by the way, I'm a preacher here, because this book has taken over my life like the last year, but in a positive way.
Yeah.
But now I've got to try and fill that void, because otherwise, and I feel it already, like I've, the last week I've felt, obviously with the anniversary and things like that, it's just not been really that good of a week. But I feel like I need to like go into like, go and find exercise and things like that. And it's really key for everyone. And if the facilities aren't there, and or people are being priced out of that, because how much is a hat pitch? I know, like,
it's going up every year, isn't
it? It's just like we're not doing anything to help people, are we, really?
Just to finish off, mate, Sean's Place, you mentioned before, you're raising money for them. That's part of it. Obviously, you've done it for you, and it sounds like a great book. I can't wait to get stuck into it, but also to raise money for Sean's Place, which is a fantastic charity, and I guess your way of saying thank you for all the help they've given you.
Yeah, it is definitely just thanking Sean's Place, because without them, I don't know whether, if I would have carried on trying to just get through by myself, I don't know whether, unfortunately, it's not nice to say, but whether I would have acted upon some of them thoughts. And they just give you a better understanding of what's going on. You can go in there, they have meetings with pharmacists, and they like tell you about the best tablets, antidepressants to take if you need to go down that route. And that is something I've done now. But just asking them will help. They do counselling, they do group sessions, they do everything, they do drop-ins. They're an unbelievable place, and Debbie, who runs it, is like a wonderful woman, honestly. Like, they're all like wonderful people in there, all the counsellors as well. And I just say to anyone, like, go and get the help if you need it. It's easy me saying this now, because I put it off for months and months and months, but it will help you, do you know what I mean? It just gives you a better understanding. And I think also for you, if you've got a partner and young children as well, like, they also do support sessions for them. Like, my partner hasn't went to that yet, but if you feel like it's affecting you at home, it can help with that as well, because depression can be temporary, can't it? But if you decide to act upon it, suicide's permanent, unfortunately, and suicide's the biggest killer of men and under the age of 50 in the UK, which is just scary statistic. But yeah, so that's just all I'd like to say, really, and that's what the whole book's for, just raising awareness for them, raising funds for them, really. And it was brilliant for me to be able to do this, and thank you so much for having me on.
Well, it's a pleasure. Pleasure to meet you. Yeah, the book by Chris Roberts, Football Greater Than Anything, is available on Amazon. We'll tweet it out. I'll tweet it out today. We'll tweet out the link. But if you go to Chris's Twitter, which is at ChrisRoberts51, there's a link in his bio right there as well that takes you through. But best of luck with it, mate, and I hope it sells well. And like you say, if it gets a publisher and gets sort of out there even more, then brilliant. And you're welcome at our game of five-a-side anytime. But we are a bit shit, I'll be honest with you. But if you want to come down and make fools of us, you think Love and the Spurs is back. Wait till you see me defend. But Tom, man, thanks for coming in.
Thanks a lot, John. Thank you.
And we are back. If you have listened to this as a podcast, thank you very much to Saj and to Chris for coming in and having a chat to us. We are going to move forward now. I'm going to talk. There's an interesting little piece, Neil. I'll come to you on it. It seems a bit ridiculous to me, pushing some notion of a rivalry. People have been mentioning it in the comments as we're going, some sort of nascent rivalry between Liverpool and Newcastle. It seems that there's a desperation to create a rivalry with Newcastle amongst so many teams. Sorry, a desperation to create a rivalry with Liverpool amongst so many teams. That always seems to happen, as though you can't really define yourself as a football team until you've got a rivalry with the Reds. I don't feel any greater or lesser rivalry. I'm obviously, you know, I've got my own views on who should or shouldn't be allowed to own football clubs, but I don't feel any greater or lesser rivalry with Newcastle right now than I did 6, 12, 18, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years ago.
Yeah, I don't see the rivalry. I mean, you saw the rivalry in the game in August. You know, they did stoke the fire in Newcastle quite well, didn't they, in that game? And, you know, I remember that the goal going in, and I remember the sort of the reaction of the crowd around me sort of as they were leaving, really, really made up that Liverpool had beaten them because of the way that they'd sort of gone about the game. You know, they were doing a fair bit of time wasting. There was a bit of, you know, a bit of needle between the benches, wasn't there? And there was obviously Nick Pope, I think, was doing a fair bit of, you know, going down on the ground and taking his time. But that was... You know, I've seen that happen with the teams. I mean, I remember Steven Gerrard's Aston Villa doing that last season and sort of the same kind of anger. I remember, you know, we've seen Everton do it, haven't we? You know, towards the back end of last season. It didn't feel like it was anything that was going to sort of linger and last. I'm guessing, I mean, listen, I can't speak for the writer. I can't speak for the reason behind it. But I guess maybe it's coming from the Newcastle side that maybe they have been a bit angered by some of Klopp's comments, you know, that he's saying about ceilings and state-owned clubs and financial power. Maybe that's starting to grate on them, and it's sort of, you know, they're eyeing Liverpool as a scalp in terms of, you know, we'd love to put one over them. We'd love to shut them up almost, and maybe that's where the idea come from. The most fascinating thing I thought in the entire article was the fact that in the 74 Cup final, they were level on trophies. The two clubs were level on trophies going into the 74 Cup final. That blew my mind in terms of that. So, yeah, it'll be a long time before that's ever said again. Even despite the financial power that Newcastle are having, are going to have. But yeah, in terms of a sort of a toxic rivalry development, I haven't seen it yet. I've seen a sort of a needly game, and you know, a little bit of time wasting, but not much else.
Is she? So Ashby, you should put in the comments, we have enough rivals, don't need more. I just haven't got totally the energy for this. You know, it just all feels to me like absolutely confected nonsense.
It is, because as Neil said, it was a game where I remember the celebrate. I didn't get a ticket for that one, and I remember celebrating in ours like a madman because of what had gone on before. Like Neil said, it was how, you know, Pope had gone down within the injury time for another 2 minutes or something. And then when we scored in the eighth or ninth minute, they were kicking off, and you think, no, lads, that's what you've done. You've brought that on. It was your.
We were there for the taking. Yeah, the ironic thing, that was always my takeaway from it, was genuinely we were there for the taking. We were in terrible nick at the time, and they just sort of limped along through the second half. Barely had a shot second half.
Yeah, I'm sure they had one disallowed as well. That was really tight on.
Yeah, it was.
VAR,
yeah,
you know what I mean, so you look back and you think, I think that's maybe why as well the Newcastle fans have you know, they've seen the backside of it, because obviously on another night they could have easily come away from Anfield with 3 points, and they've actually come away with nothing. And again, it's their only defeat of the season. So maybe it's that, trying to, as you say, trying to get this rivalry up, as far as I'm concerned. And every red I know, there is none.
the part of it as well for me, John, is that I think that there's an enormous respect towards Newcastle, and part of that, this Bobby Knighty stuff this weekend. You know, you look at Robson and what he did for English football, the nature of his career, the nature of the personality that he was, the battles he had to fight, you know, the countries he went to, what he did. And I'm made up to celebrating him on Saturday. I think it'll make the atmosphere even bigger than it would be for a half five against Newcastle. But it's exactly the sort of thing that someone like he deserves. And as part of that, he's very much someone from the Northeast. I know you went to university in Newcastle, for God's sake. You know, the idea that there should be any real form of rivalry between Liverpool and Newcastle, to me, I just feel as though it's people pulling at straws. And I hope the stuff that they're trying to do around Bobby Robson goes down well.
Yeah, and I'm sure it will. It's interesting, you know, hearing Neil's take from it, because, you know, it's not someone I necessarily thought of, but, you know, he is someone who's close, I believe, to the hierarchy in Newcastle, and someone who, you know, is someone who, you know, is maybe being fed a little bit from there. Why, I don't know, whether they feel like, you know, someone that's going to elevate them a little bit in status is not just sort of league position, but also, you know, the idea of rivalry with bigger clubs, maybe it's something that they feel that they need. I don't know. But I think you sort of need to separate, you know, if it is the club from the fans here a little bit. I would imagine that Newcastle fans are reading that today just as bemused as we are, really. You know, there's no problem when they come down here. You know, they treat it like European away, don't they? They're down early, they're drinking in pubs all afternoon and singing and stuff like that. And, you know, aside from the, you know, the odd sort of snobby comments that you'll get from scousers when anyone does anything, to be honest with you, because we're so full of self-importance that, you know, there's nothing else sort of going on, really. And so it is odd, and it just sort of feels like someone who's a writer who's a bit sort of removed from reality, and the idea of, you know, the supporters who are sort of paying to get in, who, like we've all said, I've got other things to worry about. Listen, Everton might go down, Luke. I can't You know what I mean? Liverpool are mad. We've got a European Cup game on Tuesday. Everton might go down, and you're asking me to worry about Newcastle. It's not happening.
It's not happening indeed. Listen, there's one or two technical issues. We can't hear them. So I'm not being funny about it. We just can't hear them. I'm doing all sorts of stuff, moving microphones around and all that. So I apologise if that's the case, but literally we can't hear them with reference to each other. And a couple of things have changed as we've gone. So we'll try and get to the bottom of them for whatever this comes out. And let me remind myself of approximately what time this is, so Andy can clear it up later on. I want to talk about the nature of the opponents and their history and complexity. Paul, you know, and obviously the now, for them, the next week's obviously massive. We talked about the fact that they've got the League Cup final on the horizon, and in general, at some sort of point, there is an expectation they will be playing Champions League football at some point in the future. It's not an unreasonable one that they do end up there. And that's why for them, this game on Saturday is massive. They've got all the stuff they're going to do around Bobby Robson. For me, though, that suggests to me that they've done a lot of what they've done this year by staying solid, by being quite unemotional, by picking the moment. And I do sort of wonder whether or not it could actually play into our hands, the idea of a big rowdy Saturday night. Listen, we've conceded too many early goals for me to be too complacent about it. But if we can see our way through to 0-0 on 20, I just sort of wonder if there could be a bit of space for us to counter-attack into, if there could be a bit of them over-committing, which is what they haven't been doing.
Yeah, you know what? It's funny. I think some of the people in the comments were saying about, you know, about being worried about Sam Maximin on the break and things like that, and other players like that. Almiron's obviously, you know, quite pacey. But again, it all depends how the game plays out, doesn't it? I think you're spot on again, Neil, to say, you know, don't concede early reds, you know, because like I alluded to it earlier, that, you know, Newcastle have got a really good defensive record. So you don't want to be chasing, you know, two or three goals to win a game. So I think, as you say, we can get to 20. I think it will be, you know, really important to see where we go from there. I also agree with what you're saying. I think the atmosphere helps us. I think there's times when, you know, when we've gone to grounds where, you know, you expect to go and get 3 points, and for whatever reason it hasn't happened. And that maybe is it because, you know, the atmosphere isn't, you know, a lot of teams get up for it when you play Liverpool. But I think the atmosphere will, I think it should help us. I mean, I might be completely wrong, but hopefully if we can come out and I think keep it tight, you know, and obviously then try and, you know, you mentioned about, you know, Trippier, again with Nunes, he's going to be a key. I think that's a key battle in the game. And I think if we can, you know, get at them, because I don't think they're going to be. I don't think it's going to be one of those games where it's you know, like end to end stuff. I might be completely wrong, but I think it's going to be a bit more like a chess game tomorrow. And again, it's one of those take your chances, maybe get a little bit of slice of luck along the way and see where you go from there. And again, you know, whether are they going to be thinking about the cup final a week on Sunday? I don't think they are, because I don't think they can afford to, because the position they've got themselves in. I knew Neil said that earlier. They've got themselves in that position with not, you know, you wouldn't say it's a well-beaten squad. There's some players there who are just, you know, they're doing really well. They're playing well for the team. They're playing well for Howe. And you've got to think there that if results start going against them, so let's say we do manage to get a win tomorrow, how they respond to that? Then they go to the cup final, you know, and then, you know, who knows what happens there. But let's say they do get beat on that. All of a sudden, things can unravel very quickly. And I don't think Newcastle will want that to start with a performance that they don't want tomorrow.
In terms of getting through the first 20, Neil Jones, there's something around the fact that what Newcastle have been all season is physically imposing. So, you know, they've had runs where it's Byrne left back, Joe Linton left hand side, and Willock. And the three of them got everything physically, gifts between the three of them, you know, everything that you need in that area of the pitch. I think Almiron's ability to graft and be sensible is underrated. On top of his other skills, it's interesting the manager goes out of his way to praise him earlier today. Longstaff's become important for them, but they're without Willock. Joe Linton can't play in two positions. Guimaraes is obviously suspended. He's not available either. You know, so whilst there's been a lot around this side, Trippier can get up and down, but if he's trying to get up and down, he's going to leave a big hole behind him from a Liverpool point of view. You know, this is a good time to play them, I think, despite the half five, despite the idea of a festival feel. I agree, they'll be buoyed by the cup final on the horizon, not the opposite. But this is a good time to play them for this Liverpool side, I think. I don't think we could ask for much more in terms of going to St James's Park this season.
No, especially, yeah, you're right. I mean, Guimaraes is probably their key player, isn't he? And he's obviously missing. I think probably after that, it's Trippier and the goalkeeper. I think are probably the next two for me. Almiron's obviously had a great season. I think he might be a doubt as well. He went off, didn't he, with a knock against Bournemouth. So never mind whether he's able to start. He might not be able to do 90. You know, they might not want to do that. So you might be seeing a position where he's going off in the game. Are the replacements up to scratch? You know, people like Jacob Murphy, and you know, obviously they've got Isak and Wilson, sort of one or the other, isn't it? I think Isak is going to be a very good player, but he's probably behind Wilson. You know, if they're both fit. And also, I mean, I suppose the other thing is Liverpool showed a lot of the things that we've been asking them to show recently, didn't we? You know, you look at on Monday night, they showed second balls, they showed fight, they're winning the duels, they showed taking advantage of counter-attack and opportunities. They showed a bit of strength in depth off the bench, you know, to come on and change the game or see out the game. So they go in with a little bit of positivity, albeit with the Everton caveat of the fact that, yeah, okay, they're not up to much.
They're 18th. It's just the fact of the matter. They're just 18th, you know what I mean? So that you've got to remember that bit.
Yeah, of course. But Liverpool have been playing like they're 18th, haven't they? So, you know,
absolutely.
What you wanted to see was Liverpool play properly, you know, in terms of do the things that we're used to. The fullbacks were influential. So I do think a lot depends on what you said, really, is how do you start the game Liverpool-wise? Do you give anything away like you did at Wolves, like you did at Brighton, you know, at the start of the second half, like you did at Brentford, you know, in that spell? If you give nothing away, you would hope Liverpool would gain confidence from that and feel away and start to use some of them gifts. You know, you've got Gakpo with a bit of confidence after getting his first goal. I mean, to be honest, I think we saw his confidence in that half hour after he'd scored. You know, it was like he'd sort of had an energy drink, wasn't it? And he was sort of, right, give me the ball. Can he take that into the next game, or do you lose, you know, does he lose that momentum? I think there's a lot of reasons to sort of be hopeful if you're a Liverpool fan, but with the caveat of, you know, I went to Brentford thinking they were going to win. I went to Brighton, come out for the second half of the Brighton game and thought, well, he can't be as bad as he were in the first half. And yes, they were. I went to Wolves and thought, well, this is going to be a tight one. You know, there's not going to be more than the odd goal in this because of the way Wolves are, and you let three in. So there's a lot of, you could sort of spin a coin almost in what happens. But I've got a slight feeling. I think Liverpool might turn up and give what I would call an adult performance in this game. And that's what's required, I think, you know, from a Liverpool point of view.
It's making me think of Spurs away, this one a little bit, Paul. That was a certain kickoff time as well. They're in good shape. Again, they're physically robust. But they were also going to play on the front foot, and Liverpool played on the counter and did so really, really effectively. It's given me that vibe. It wouldn't surprise me if he makes one change, perhaps in the middle of the park. He name checks Keita in his press conference, which he often doesn't do. He very rarely goes out of his way to name a footballer he's not asked about. And he does name Keita, which makes me wonder whether or not he might have an eye on the idea that obviously it's a big turnaround Saturday, Tuesday. He'll want moves from the bench as well. I do wonder whether or not we might just get Naby Keita off the right or something like that. What are you expecting? How do you think we're going to go?
I think he might do, because I think, again, Henderson, obviously, you know, I know some of the comments and the thing about his rivalry with Newcastle, but I think he'll put, obviously that'll be put aside by Klopp. So I think he might do what you've just said. Again, the fact that he's name-checked him in the conference. I think he'll bring Van Dijk back in. People might say that's harsh, but I think he will. I'm not too sure who for, though, to be honest with you, because, again, both you know, Gomez and Matip have been up and down this season. But I thought on Monday they both played well. I couldn't really fault either of them. Maybe Gomez was slightly better. But I do think he'll bring Van Dijk back in. And then again, I think he'll keep the front three. I think, you know, like Neil said, Gakpo's, you know, confidence just seemed to lift in it as soon as he got that goal. We got one turned in the middle and past three or four men. So, you know, again, you'd like to think he's going to start with those three. Maybe one change in midfield, maybe one change at the back. So that's what I think he'll go with. But who knows?
It's dead hard because, you know, on one hand, you want to keep people fresh for Tuesday, and it is tight. It's obviously a later kickoff on Saturday than into Tuesday night. I think if it was Saturday, Wednesday, you can really make the argument to pick the team to start again against Madrid. But with it being so tight, it's tough. And because in one way, you know, you think you look at, for example, the axis on that right-hand side, Trent and Salah and Henderson, and how well that worked, and you think, oh, it would be great to ask them to sort of go again on that, because, you know, it did work so well, but then Jordan just looks like that break's just done him a world of good. So to then go, right, okay, it's 3 games in 9 days, please, George, just seems, you know, a bit silly when the proof is in the pudding. The, you know, it basically what happened to him was he had too many games in his legs. So it's tough. It's a tough one, really. He's got tough decisions all over the place. Do you ask lads to do 60 and then say, we're going to sort of take you off no matter what? Or do you ask for, you know, big last 20, 25 from someone like Henderson? But, you know, if we have a fair 60, 65 like we do at Wolves, then it doesn't matter who comes on. We could throw us four on, you know, at the back, couldn't we? So I think it's hard. The one I think he will do is Virgil. I think it's a big shout to throw someone in cold against Madrid, you know, even though they have got a few forwards out. I think it's, you know, he'll want to play. I think Virgil obviously gets the substitute performance. Well, substitute performance. The only thing he did was hold that ball dead high, wasn't he? Out the reach of the Everton boys. But you know, he's back in the squad, so I think he'll play. And then I've got a sneaky suspicion he might do Jota and just ask him to do 60, just to get him, almost just to get him a bit sharper. For if he does need them on Tuesday nights.
Neil, what do you think he does?
Yeah, I think Van Dijk, he basically said today, Van Dijk will start. You know, he was asked, I think he was asked outright, you know, is Van Dijk in a position to start? And he said, yeah, you know, he should be. He said he looked ready in training, and he looked ready, you know, I assume he looked ready again today. So I expect him to come in. Big question is probably who for, isn't it? You know, I would probably say it'd be for Matip, for pace, and also just probably just as a punishment for that one moment against Everton where he missed the ball, and you know, like, you can't afford to do that, you know, we can all laugh about it now, we've won, isn't it, but you still did that in a game after you had a nightmare at Wolves, you know, like we still need that more reliability. I thought Gomez had his second best game of the season. City was obviously being the best, and I mean you can argue about Ellis Sims and the value of playing him from an Everton perspective, but he had a good game. And I think maybe the pace on the counter attack of Gomez just potentially gives Liverpool a better bit of protection. I think there will be a change in midfield. One of Fabinho or Henderson to miss out, with Keita to come in. I would probably say you would go Keita for Keita with Bajcetic, some for Fabinho to miss out, and then I think the front three, I think it'll stay as is. I think they'll go Nunes, Gakpo, Salah, I mean, we don't talk to him, but Elliot's played some games, hasn't he? Started a fair bit. He's been featured in every game. I don't think he'll get the nod, but he'd be hoping to start a game like this. They made some. I mean, Keita got the winner there last season, didn't he? Played towards the back end of the season, so
really good performance as well.
Yeah, it did. I seem to remember Jota being particularly good in that game as well.
Milner started and played well.
Yeah, and Gomez played right back, didn't he? So he made a lot of changes, obviously, back end of the season. I don't think he'll go quite as extreme. I don't think we'll be seeing Tsimikas and people like that or Milner at fullback. I think he'll stick with the bulk of the first team, but I think there'll probably be two. I think the centre-back and the centre-midfielder, I think there'll be one of each. And then I would probably say Fabinho and Matip to be the two to step out.
Okay, thank you very much indeed to Paul, to Neil and to John. Everyone who's contributed all the way through the show as well. Do check out all the stuff we put out about the report into the Champions League final across the course of the week if you haven't had the ability to do so already. Hopefully you've been able to find your way through that. Do download the app as well. All the reaction you need post-match after Newcastle versus Liverpool. It's an enormous game. It really is an enormous game. But an enormous game does not a rivalry make. See you later.
Podcast Network.